The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We're back. We did a show for two G1 shows each last week. This time we're back with four G1 shows to review because last weekend I wasn't in Germany. I was in London for a vacation weekend. And Dylan, in fact, I got a question about my camping 2 weeks ago. Can you believe that?
It's hard to believe, but you know what? I was wondering about this myself, too. I think the listener read my mind and wanted to speak for me here on this one. So I think you need to set the record straight on how your camping trip was.
Yeah, that's from our listener DC, who sent in an email, I think, like 2 weeks ago already. I never thought that the trivia about my life would be so important here on this show, but I guess here we go. DC here, Strigger, just wondering how the camping trip went. Did you really go camping, or were you in a five-star cabin with full utilities? I went camping. I did. It wasn't as far out in the wilderness as you would probably presume. It was a part in the woods in my hometown that's owned by the family of a friend of mine. It's almost near the town, but a little bit more outside. So I would say something in between, not a five-star cabin, but not real camping outside in the woods, like you could go far in the woods. But as I tweeted when I came back 2 weeks ago, I ended camping early because of the enormous thunderstorms that week. On the Friday we had a 2 hour thunderstorm, and on the Saturday there were two, so everything was draining wet, and that wasn't necessarily as great. What did we eat? Well, we ate Bratwurst, of course. We made Bratwurst over our camping fire, and is there such a thing in the US as I will try the direct translation, but while I'm looking it up, a stick bread, where you put bread on a stick?
It's possible. I don't think I've ever seen it here. Campfire
twist bread is the translation that's coming up here.
That could be good. That sounds pretty tasty. I like twist bread. Yeah. We do have twist bread, but it's not on a stick.
We put it on a stick and we roast it over the fire. So it's like it's just the batter for the bread, and you put it on a stick and you roast it over the fire to eat it then.
Right.
We had that. We had, what did we have? We had some salads. We prepared them before that, and that was just a nice little camping trip there. And well, last weekend I was in London for a vacation weekend. So Dylan, I was out over the weekend, while the two G1 shows on the Saturday and the Sunday happened. So I didn't watch them live, and I had to catch up on the Monday. And we originally wanted to do a show on the Monday, but I was too worn out from the weekend because my plane got delayed and I was only home like on midnight, had to drive from the airport to my place. And so here we are now, after these four shows, and we're looking back at those four shows, starting with day 9 of the G1 Climax from Nagoya, the Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium, drawing 6,327 people. And I don't think we have to go through the undercard matches. Those were all right. I'm just looking at them. Nothing in particular that stands out to me, right?
Yeah, we've long since passed the undercard.
Yeah, we have. So let's jump right in here with Togi Makabe defeating Yuji Nagata in 10:45. What did you think about that match?
Oh, this was the match Nagata got eliminated from the tournament officially. This was the end of the line. You know, when it comes to Makabe, you know, you kind of know what you're going to get with him. And I think that's exactly what we got here. When I was rating it, I had it right kind of in the middle. A solid match, but Nagata's probably his worst. But it was still solid.
Yeah. Solid match. Solid opening match for the G1 matches on that day in Block A. Then we had a match that I in particular liked a lot. I wrote on Twitter that I loved everything about it because it was such an enormous clash of styles with Bad Luck Fale going against Kota Ibushi. And in the end, Bad Luck Fale was able to beat Kota Ibushi. What was particularly interesting about this match, I thought, was that Kota Ibushi went in a similar direction as Zack Sabre Jr. and tried to chop down the giant. And while Zack Sabre was successful in doing so with his submissions, Kota Ibushi, he wasn't as successful as Zack Sabre Jr. was. So in the end, Bad Luck Fale was able to hit the Bad Luck Fall. And man, what a Bad Luck Fall that was, because Kota Ibushi took it right on one of the shoulders.
Yeah, no, that was a devastating Bad Luck Fall. I thought, for the most part, this had a real smart layout, like you mentioned. And Ibushi got his in. They actually worked around some count-out spots, too, that they kind of teased in this match to kind of get even the odds, so to speak, for the smaller man in Ibushi. There's a part where Ibushi went for the last ride, which I thought was very silly.
You're going to go for your moves, and you're going to try them, no matter what.
Maybe. Like I said, I don't know if I agree with that. If my move was that, and I was facing Fale, and I'm probably close to Ibushi. But, you know, how big is he, do you think?
Ibushi?
Yeah.
Ibushi is, let me just look at it, he must be about 5'11", something like that.
Mm-hmm. How much does he weigh?
189, according to Cage Match.
Okay, I'm actually kind of bigger than him. but Even still, I still would not try to powerbomb Fall. So I didn't like that.
Dylan, the question that's in my mind right now, would the Ragnarok work on Bad Luck Fale?
No, the Ragnarok would not work on Bad Luck at all. It would be that's a power move. So I could not. I have to do that to a smaller guy, like, you know, Zach or something. But not Fale, because he would. If I tried to do that, he would squash me. I die. That's how this match would end.
Yeah.
You know. So but besides that, it was a good match overall. It was a very smart layout, and they worked their styles, and it was a solid match.
Yes, it was very much so. And then we had Hiroki Goto defeating Zack Sabre Jr. in 10:10. I think with the GTR, I think he won the match. Am I correct on that?
Yes, with the GTR.
Again, here, solid match in the mid-card of the G1 Climax show here in Nagoya. Don't have anything particular to say about this match. Just a solid performance from both.
That's basically what I think overall in terms of quality. I think it kind of lacked any sort of the intensity of their last
match.
Yeah, so I kind of was a little let down, but it was still solid. I like Goto using the PK, too, in this match. He started to utilize that a little more. We saw him use the headlock the sleeper hold rather from earlier on, and I think that's a story they could really go down the line. If he's, everyone in Block A is still alive pretty much, except for two guys. But if they continue down that path, that's something they could point out as the tournament goes along. Zach, he looked fine here. This was a solid match, but not as great as it could have.
As I'm looking at the pictures here we have on purolove.com, we completely forgot to mention that Ibushi, when he went for these countout spots, he did a moonsault from high up in the building down onto Bad Luck Fale, and he also was able to German suplex Bad Luck Fale. We have to point that out. That's something.
Yeah, they brought him to the crowd at one point. Yeah. That set up Ibushi going to the second level to hit the moonsault.
Wondering if he's now banned from the Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium too.
He's too much of a renegade.
Yes, he is. This show then went on with Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Yoshihashi, and I remember, Dylan, when we talked about the wrestlers first being announced for the G1 Climax, I mentioned that I would really love to see Yoshihashi versus Tanahashi headlining a Curtain Hall show. But it ended up being the semi-main here on this show. Tanahashi defeated Yoshihashi in 13:35 with the High Fly Flow in a what I thought was a good match, but here the problem I had with this match is that I never for one second believed that Yoshihashi could pull the upset here.
And that was a problem in his match with Naito too. They really had to fight the crowd on Naito, and they ultimately were kind of successful near the very end. Here, like you said, I totally agree with you on this point. There was not any drama for this match, but I thought it was technically sound, and they worked a good match. I think it could have been better in a situation like you mentioned in Korakuen. You know, if Tanahashi was, maybe he brought some more of his heelish tendencies, get the crowd behind Yoshihashi. You know what I'm saying? Because I think Yoshihashi, he's had a good tournament thus far, but I think he hasn't been put in position to stand out the way he was last year, where he was like one of the most over people. People were crying when he got eliminated and everything. Here, it's more like they have him on the level of everyone, but not really on the level.
That's an issue. Last year, he was the ultimate underdog. First exactly. G1 Climax, and he benefited very much from this underdog role. This year he is in a weird position. He still is kind of the underdog, but he's more established and has more experience than other guys now in this tournament, and so he's just caught in the middle here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Juice is now him.
He was last
year. And now he's like a level above that, he still doesn't have any wins that makes people want to believe in him. He's someone in desperate need of... He could really have used a win over someone like Tanahashi or Naito at some point, and just to make the crowd believe in him, if they ever want to go down that route. Because right now, it feels like every time he gets these big matches, it kind of underwhelms what you think it could be. And even when they work good, and I think these two actually work good together to have a little bit of chemistry. And I thought this was a good match, but it could have been more if the crowd believed in him a little more. And like you said, he's kind of like too good to be the underdog, but not good enough to actually beat anybody. And that's a bad place to be.
Right. That was not as exciting. We pointed it out. Never really thought Yoshihashi would pull the upset here. The other way around, in the main event of that show, I was expecting Tomohiro Ishii to pull the upset over Tetsuya Naito, which in the end he did. So at that point in time in the G1 Climax, both were at 6 points, and this match went 21 minutes. Again, a lot of character display by both Ishii and Tetsuya Naito. Tetsuya Naito, in all of his matches, is this guy that doesn't respect his opposition. That happened here again, and they went to a great finishing stretch when in the end Ishii was able to hit the vertical drop brainbuster. I thought this was a very good match, but not necessarily as great as the match they had last year for the heavyweight championship.
Yeah, the drama and the importance just wasn't there, I felt like, you know. But I have to say, I really enjoyed this match too. I was really happy to see Ishii get the win here. I wasn't sure what to think going forward, but I really enjoyed this match for what it was. I agree with you that it was not as good as last year's match, but there was some good stuff to be had here, and I really liked Ishii getting the big win in the main event, and that puts him a level above someone like Yoshihashi here, and he's had a good tournament. I think this is interesting because the way the results have played out, he's right up there at this point, and he has a tiebreaker over Naito, and I think that match him versus Tanahashi has more consequences now, so I really like that, because if he gets a tiebreaker over Tanahashi, he becomes a legitimate threat, and he's never really been that before in a G1.
No.
So I really like him getting the win.
So Tomohiro Ishii, much more of a success story than you thought going in about him, I guess. And
I didn't have him having many wins at all. So yeah. I'm happy to be wrong.
So the Stone Pitbull, that's a great talking point. I wanted to get into the character of Tomohiro Ishii a little bit here. Because there is this meme that's on the internet where after a loss backstage, Tomohiro Ishii says, I'm a sad man, write about me what you want. And
I posted that meme before.
Excuse me?
I posted that meme myself.
I think we all did. Yeah. At one point. So even after a victory, Tomohiro Ishii still sticks to this character as everybody who wins a main event match in a G1 Climax show usually takes it to the mic and addresses the crowd. But Tomohiro Ishii just stood there for like 5 seconds, took in the applause from the audience, and then just went backstage. So it's just his character is just always the same. It doesn't matter if it's winning or losing.
I hope he wasn't sad when he lost, though. I hope he had some happiness, even though he's a humble man. But hopefully he was with us. That's the main thing I'm concerned about with Ishii. But you know, he's having a great tournament. He is having a prolific tournament, actually.
Yes.
And I don't know if you know this, Striga, but I've rated every single match for myself. I've used a form, and by form I mean I've emailed myself each star rating for every show and every match on the show, and I have like 12 different emails to myself right now.
I was just going to ask.
Yes, I have all the emails and I've calculated ratings for everyone. And Ishii,
oh,
I won't reveal those ratings until the end, as I've used a scientific calculation to grade each wrestler through the tournament. But suffice it to say, Ishii has had one of the strongest tournaments I can remember. In any G1, to be honest with you, every match of his, I think, I would recommend it was a legit great match. Except for the match with Makabe, and even that was good, but every other match I have is a great match. I think that's one of the first times I could say that. And I hope he closes it out strong and gets there, because I think he's had a really underrated tournament somehow, despite everyone knows he's great, but he's not one of the main talking points from a lot of people. And I think if you really analyze his run and his list of matches that he's had, he's had a spectacular tournament, and I think he's had the best tournament of anyone in terms of pure match quality, in my opinion. Very slightly over Ibushi, obviously. But in pure match quality, I think Ishii has stood out and been amazing. And I really enjoy his work in this tournament.
Yes, I enjoyed Ishii a lot, too. That's a lot of praise from you, and I'm really, really excited to see your final ratings in the end. I gotta say, I didn't do any lists of any sort this time around. I'm just sitting back and enjoying this G1 Climax tournament and enjoying talking about the tournament with you too. So this was day 9 of the tournament. Solid day, I would say. Nothing.
Yeah, I like that show.
Yeah, as a whole, it was a good show, but nothing that really stood out.
Right.
Yeah, I guess.
No top 5 matches. Of
right.
The
Right. This took us to Gifu, to the Gifu Industrial Hall on July 30, 2,452 fans for the show that was headlined by Katsushika Okada versus Juice Robinson, so a Block B show, which was started by Evil defeating Toru Yano in a little over 90 seconds. Again, Dylan, I gotta say the phrase that I'm gonna use all the time when Toru Yano has matches like these: a match right down your alley.
The best Yano match of the tournament, right there, baby. I loved it. I loved what we saw here. I think this is the perfect way to use Yano: do some flash pins to start off, and then have him get destroyed very quickly, and have it end right there. And that's what we saw here. No really messing around or anything like that too much. We had the exposed buckle, of course. I mean, that's fine. But we saw a very inoffensive 90-second match.
Right. And now for something completely different. They already teased how this match was gonna go in the tag match on the day prior to that. Minoru Suzuki versus Tama Tonga. a lot of outside brawling, a lot of involvement of Suzuki-gun when Minoru Suzuki came out. I actually liked this very much when Suzuki came out. Tama Tonga laid out Desperado holding up the Suzuki-gun banner, and Tama Tonga started walking behind Minoru Suzuki as if he was El Desperado, so that was pretty cool. But aside from that, decent match, nothing special. They again protect Minoru Suzuki with this brawling style he does, with his outside brawling style. And in the end, he won it with the Gotch-style pile driver. Yeah, decent match.
I think the other highlight of this match was when Tonga, when they were brawling into the crowd, he stole someone's beer or soda yes. or something. I noted that there. So I have to say, this may be the first show where Yano didn't have the worst match of the show to me, because I hated this match. I don't know why what you're talking about. There was a lot of interference at the end. We got the ref bump.
Yep.
You know, Suzuki pulled the ref in the way of the corner splash. They got the chairs. And it was just all going on, and I just wanted this match to end.
Yeah, it was a lot of smoke and mirrors, as I said. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted it to end, and it finally ended. It felt like a long time, but it was only 10 minutes, which is kind of a long time. But Suzuki did beat up Yagi after the match, too. So you must have been happy with that.
Of course, of course. yeah, well, this took us to Zanada going over Michael Elgin with his rounding body press, and I think this may have been the first time that this finish actually worked for Zanada, because he was going for his skull end, his dragon sleeper, and he didn't choke out Michael Elgin to the point where Elgin had to tap or where Elgin was passing out, but he choked him out to the point where Elgin wasn't able to move when Zanada was going to the top rope for his rounding body press. That's his version of the moonsault. Defeating Michael Elgin in 15 minutes. I don't have many recollections of this match, but I remember it being a good match.
Yeah, this was right down the middle, pretty much. A solid match, but kind of one of these Zanada matches where it's like the first... once you get to the finish, he kind of turns it up a little bit, but it's one of those things where it's just kind of a very one note, I would say. Very even keel for these guys. And I think Elgin may have wanted to take he may have held back a little bit after his previous match. Not held back necessarily, but just he put so much in his match with Omega that he may not have had it all here. And I have to say, I will say this too. It may sound like I've been a little harsh on old Sonata in this tournament, but when I was doing my scientific mathematical ratings, he had a higher rating than I thought he would. And I will give him props, because he's the only person to wrestle Yano and Suzuki, and he hasn't suffered too much by it in his overall rating. So I can't be too hard on him, but this was a fine match, nothing.
Yeah, a lot of decent to fine matches here on these shows. And let's go to another match that stood out a little bit more than the other matches we talked about here. It went almost 17 minutes. Kenny Omega going over Satoshi Kojima with the storyline of Kenny Omega totally neglecting that Kojima could pull out the upset here, when at the beginning of the match Kojima was trying for a suicide dive. And not a suicide dive, but a dive over the top rope. Kenny Omega said to the camera, "Oh man, he's trying to do a dive." And he was laughing about Kojima. But Kojima came back, of course, as he usually does, with a lot of fire. He was able to hit the CCD, I think, in this match. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
He was able to hit it.
The Cozy Crush Dynamite, baby.
Right. So Kojima was close in getting the victory, but in the end, Kenny Omega was able to lift him up for the One Winged Angel, which is impressive, because Satoshi Kojima, he's a big man. He's like 250 pounds, I think, something like that. And Kenny was able to lift him up for the One Winged Angel, and was able to get the victory here. Kenny up to 8 points, Satoshi Kojima still at zero.
Yeah, probably about halfway through this match, I thought, man, this show sucks. I had like by the end of it, I was like, man, this Block B show, another crappy Block B show we're watching. Omega coming out with the shirt and the stupid pants or whatever you want to call them that he wears, but his house show attire, you know, his house show tights.
Yes, his tag team attire.
Yeah, yeah. But they kind of turned it around at the end of the match here, and like you said, it kind of played into the story they did here, and it was something different, and I give them props for that, but, you know, it's not going to be in my match of the year list either, if we're being realistic. And, yeah. But they did, they turned it around, you know, they turned it around, and they had a solid little match.
Yes, they did. Which took us to the main event of that show, Katsushika Okada defeating Juice Robinson. Okada going heel, going total dick heel here. And just like with Hiroshi Tanahashi, when Katsushika Okada in these kind of matches, when he has the right opponent to do it with, and Juice Robinson was the perfect opponent to do it with, Okada is a monster great heel. And he here in the crowd was solidly behind Juice Robinson. Okada tried all kinds of leg submissions and took out Robinson's leg throughout the match, of course. Juice Robinson was able to fight back, and I don't know, I wasn't really convinced that he would pull up the upset, but there were some moments in the match where it was kind of going into that direction, but in the end, of course, Okada was able to defeat Juice Robinson. And we talked about this story of Okada holding to the wrist of his opponent, holding onto the wrist. Maybe a little overplayed at that point, and I may scratch out the little because Okada does it in every match. But on the other hand, it shows that these G1 Climax matches are a level above every other match that he does over the course of the year. So he has to put in an extra effort to get the victory here in these situations, and he was able to do that. While Okada was a great heel in this match, Juice Robinson's babyface performance was incredible, and I read a tweet, I think 2 days ago, if you had told me in 2014 that CJ Parker would be the greatest babyface in the world in 2017, I would have laughed. And it's just amazing. Dylan, it was amazing.
Yeah, Juice was awesome here. I really got to give him props. I really loved the moment at the end, right before Okada went for that third Rainmaker, even in this match, he just punched him in the face, like to break it up. I thought that was a great moment. You know, he had so much. I thought he was really great here, you know, and I think him being great added even more to Okada's heel work.
Yeah.
Because you could see him starting to, as the match went along, they started off kind of like, it was kind of like friendly type wrestling, you know, not anything crazy. You know, there was some grappling going on, clean breaks and all that. But then once you got further along in the match and Juice kept coming back, Okada started to yell at him and, you know, like you said, put him with the three Rainmakers and everything, blew right through him. And I think that they did a good job. I think this match was missing that one big kind of thing that could make you think Juice could win, like moment.
That one near fall. One near fall was missing, probably, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If he could have hit a big move that signaled that he could win, I think that would have put this over the top. But still, a very good main event. No complaints at all about this. I have to say, I don't like that holding onto the wrist deal, but because he does it in all of his matches, though, not just the G1, even when he had the title matches and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course,
big match only is
fine. He does it in all of his singles matches at this point. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So like I said, I don't know. It's fine. It's just something he does now. But I wonder about this three Rainmakers thing again, even with Juice. I kind of like the match with Kojima a little bit better, if I had to say. But that's just me. I like this match too. It was really good. I do have to say this. No, I'm going to hold off on that until we get to night 12. Move on. I have something to say about Okada, and particularly some people talking about Okada. But let's move on. this, I didn't like this show that much until the main event happened, but I like the main event.
Yes, same for me. Not the best G1 show, but we talked about it when we did a little preview on the G1 or when we talked about the first days. It's not always going to be as great because it's a long fucking tournament, and we're right in the middle of this now with day 12 being past us. We still have 10 days of G1 action left here, so we'll have to see what comes out in the end. I'm sure they will tear it up when the finishing stretch is in front of us. But let's go to the show that happened on August 1st. We had the Monday off. That was a nice little change. So the G1 show from Kagoshima happened on Tuesday. 3,418 fans in the building. And the G1 matches started off with Yoshihashi defeating Bad Luck Fale. Dylan, what was your impression of this match and the match story they went with?
I think that this was Yoshihashi more in his element than some of these other matches. Playing the underdog here, he had a great babyface run at this point. Obviously, he won it with a roll-up, before the win here. Not anything impactful, high impact. Fale has some big moves here. I really love the lariat he hit bit in the middle of this match.
His lariats are always great.
Yeah. Fale hit a great lariat on Hashi here. And, they kind of brawled into the crowd. This is a recurring trope in these Fale matches. Mm-hmm. They went to the crowd a little bit here. Yoshi didn't go into the second level and do it at Moonsault, but they did do that count-out tease again. And I just thought, I think Yoshihashi has a way that he excels in, and it was more along this match than trying for him to play tough guy and be on the level. Kind of like those Suzuki matches, remember, where he would go kind of toe-to-toe with Suzuki in terms of striking? Mm-hmm. I think he's much better as an underdog, valiant babyface. And I was happy to see him get the win here because he desperately needed something. It was fine. It was a good match. I actually really enjoyed this match for what it was.
Yes.
What'd you think?
Me too. Midway through the match, I was thinking they are doing this David versus Goliath storyline. And I was thinking Yoshihashi's trying so hard that it has to end with Bad Luck Fale winning, because Yoshihashi was trying everything is in his arsenal and nothing was working on Bad Luck Fale. But in the end, when Yoshihashi then got the upset victory with this high angle small package, that was the finish. I thought this storyline worked either way, because on the one hand, you had this giant that stood above everything that Yoshihashi threw at him, but on the other hand, Yoshihashi was able to change up his offense. unlike on the prior singles match that Fale had with Kota Ibushi, Yoshihashi was able to change his offense and try different things to get the victory. I think he tried the butterfly lock 3 times in this match, but he had to see that this butterfly lock wasn't working on Bad Luck Fale. And so he went to getting the victory with this roll up. And that made for a great story, and I liked this match very much.
Yeah, crowd popped too when he got the win. He got a great reaction for the upset win here. I think they thought Fale would win, and I kind of thought Fale would win too. I think we all thought Fale would win, judging by your...
Yes, we did.
Your reaction there, but I liked it. I thought the crowd was super into it, and it was just a really solid match.
Right. Zack Sabre Jr. got a enormous, big, big victory over Togi Makabe in 9 minutes, 30 seconds. Zack Sabre Jr. going up to 8 points, Togi Makabe at 6 points, with a kind of a modified knee hold. When Makabe came from the top rope, he missed the King Kong knee drop, and Zack Sabre Jr. went right to his knee and took him into the knee hold and was able to get the tap out victory. And I was reading on Twitter that this was the first time that Makabe tapped out in 11 years.
Wow.
That's a strong, strong statement. Really a signature victory for Bad Luck Fale. Why do I mention Bad Luck Fale all the time on this show?
He's your favorite.
He's obviously. Signature victory for Zack Sabre Jr. And this was the fourth move that Zack Sabre Jr. used to get a victory in the G1 Climax, which is it's kind of what AJ Styles did in his last G1 Climax. And yeah, Sabre, strong victory here.
Yeah, and this was a very simple match. They've really kept a lot of Zack's matches kind of bare bones here. This was a simple story. He used a lot of legwork to set up Makabe missing the knee drop.
Yes.
And that led to the finish of the match, which was the leg submission, the knee bar submission that he pulled off here. So it was a very good, solid match. It didn't go super long. It wasn't a classic or anything like that. But they did exactly what they wanted to do here, and it worked just fine. And I like you. I like the match. And I think that's been a signature of Zack here, that he's working a very signature style of match, his own thing. And it's come into play in all of his matches, and I think they've done a pretty good job with it.
Yeah. Huge crowd roar when Sabre was able to get the tap out. I don't think that anyone was expecting that. So
they booked him so well in this tournament, too, with big wins, that they've done quite a bit better than I thought they would. But I guess he could lose out. but as of now, they're doing a great job with him and making him definitely appear to be on a certain level in the company, and they're doing a great job of that. And I definitely think he is definitely in line for a rematch with Tanahashi later on down the line for that Intercontinental title. And I think he's a legitimate challenger, both to us who love his work and think he's a great wrestler, but also to the fans who may not be as familiar with him.
Yeah.
I think they've done a great job establishing him. And if that was one of their main goals, one of Gato and Prince's main goals of the G1 this year, I give it 2 thumbs up, because they did a great job.
Exactly, they did. They did a great job. And, you know, I still think he will end up with 10 points in the tournament, maybe 12. But I think 10. 10 is more realistic. But amongst these 10 points are victories over Togi Makabe and Hiroshi Tanahashi. That's big. Yep. That's big.
And by submission, too.
Right. Right. 2 times submissions, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Then we had a match that I watched twice, actually, because I liked it so much. Tomohiro Ishii, going up to 8 points, defeated Yuji Nagata with the vertical drop brainbuster. And this really was a great display of what strong style is, with Yuji Nagata just not wanting to go down, fighting with everything he has. Yuji Nagata really went down swinging. He was able to get reversals on Tomohiro Ishii. Yuji Nagata was able to hit a brainbuster himself during this match, and they really had a fierce fight, and Ishii came out on top in the end with his vertical drop brainbuster. But just a very enjoyable match here.
Oh man, this was a great match, I thought. You know, Ishii and Nagata, I have to admit, when I was coming into this, it was not in a place of, well, I want to see these guys have a 5-star match. It was like, man, Nagata's eliminated. This story sucks. Like, I don't know if I want to watch this anymore. And by the end, I was like, man, this rocked. I just want to see. Like, it doesn't matter. Just let Nagata have all these matches. And the crowd is like, well, we know you're eliminated, but we love you anyway. So even this may be the last time we see you, so let's just give you all of our love. And hope for, even if you win or lose, just do your best. And they had a tremendous match, in my opinion. Ishii, again, to reiterate what I said, Ishii having a prolific tournament. And Nagata is not only is he the spiritual MVP, he's also having a lot of great matches and being one of the best wrestlers in this tournament, as I always knew he could be. And I really loved this match a lot. I thought it was one of the top 5 of the tournament, in my opinion.
Man, you just took away the point I was going to make about Yuji Nagata's story in the G1 Climax. Because, let me rephrase that, what you just said, because if you look at the bigger picture with Yuji Nagata, it's just the same story they did with Yushin Thunder Liger in the Best of the Super Junior.
And that sucked too.
But if you look, as you just said, if you look at the smaller pictures that make up the bigger picture in the end,
They all suck too.
No, they don't. As you just mentioned, if you see every single match, it's a great story. If you see the bigger picture, it might be not as great, but in the end, it works out for very exciting matches with Yuji Nagata.
It's not a great story, but Nagata is so great of a wrestler, he makes his matches along the stupid story that isn't even logical when you look at it. He makes it okay to watch, despite all of my problems with what they're doing with them. And it's not enjoyable to me.
Of course, you're very biased towards Yuji Nagata.
I love Nagata. I didn't expect him to win or anything. But it's like, this guy was the never champion last year.
Yes.
And
yes,
was
yes.
beating Shibata and doing good. And now it's like he's the worst in the company in kayfabe.
Yeah, so
he can't beat anybody.
I can see where you're coming from, of course. Definitely, yes.
Like, and either way, even if he sucked last year, I still would want him to do good. Because I think it would benefit all involved to have him involved for as long as possible. I'm not saying he should win or advocating him winning this tournament. But I think it would make all of his matches just that much better if there was real drama. Because despite how great the work was, I never once thought Nagata would win or there was any sort of drama in terms of him winning. The only match that will have that is his last match, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's my problem. I don't understand what the problem would be with having him alive for a few more nights to just add a little bit of to his matches. That's how I...
Absolutely, that's a absolutely valid point here. And as I mentioned, great match. If you look at the bigger picture, there is certainly a point that you can criticize, just like you just did. Yeah. And to the point of criticism, next match was Tetsuya Naito versus Hiroki Goto. And Dylan, I gotta go back to the point. I just don't feel Hiroki Goto matches here in this tournament. His match with Zack, we talked about it, was fine too in the middle of the card on the show we talked about first here on this episode. Naito defeated Goto in 13 minutes 30 seconds with the Destino. They had a very good back and forth in the end when Naito was hitting this running Destino and Goto was able to reverse one Destino into the Ushikoroshi, and then Naito still getting the victory with the Destino. That was good, but overall, I didn't really feel this match. There was no fire to me here. Just a solid G1 performance by both guys.
I didn't like this match. Yeah. I thought it was a real letdown. I thought it was a letdown.
Able to do, it was certainly a letdown, yes.
Yeah, I have to say, you say that about Goto, and there's some truth to that. I really liked his tournament up to this match. I thought he was actually one of the ones when I was doing my ratings. He came across higher than I thought he would. And I was like, man, even I underrate him. And he's like my favorite guy. But when I looked at Naito, I think he had that one great match versus Ibushi to start off. And I'm not in love with all of his matches since then, to be honest with you. Especially that Bad Luck Fale match. That was real bad. But I thought he had the worst Nagata match up till Makabe. And that Yoshihashi match wasn't what it could have been too. And I think he has this style that you're gonna need a very certain type of person to maximize it. And I don't think he really clicked with Goto here. To be honest with you, I'm not in love with Naito's tournament at all, to be honest with you, outside of that first match. And I know he's very popular, and he also has the Nakamura effect of having one great match that can overrate all of your other matches. But I when I looked at it, I was surprised that I was like, man, your tournament hasn't been that great thus far. And I don't think this really added credence to either one of these men's G1s thus far.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like Nakamura often did. I wouldn't say like that Naito is phoning in here. I wouldn't say that this performance is the greatest. I would say he's a little bit under the radar right now. He's a little bit under what he really can do. But I think he's holding a little bit back for the final days here. Still, solid performance.
Even the GTR in this match didn't look as good as it usually did. It just felt like Naito is kind of his lackadaisical style that he has, and Goto just... he just went along with it, you know. Even stuff that looked good in the past that just didn't quite work out here. I wonder if anything had to do with following up that amazing match that the crowd was super into with Ishii and Nagata. Also, want to mention another criticism here. Another match where it takes two Destinos to win. The finishers continue to be watered down in this tournament, and I'm not a fan of that at all. And he even hit the GTR, and it still didn't win this match. So
yes, I don't really know what the purpose of that was, because when I don't know what purpose it served that Goto kicked out of this one Destino. He was down, and the Destino was perfectly hit, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they've done that in a lot of matches. It'd be different variations, but it still kind of is the same. Like, and they keep doing it, and it's like this move is kind of getting watered down. Even the GTR, which was devastating, they kind of sold out of this match for no reason, this kind of mid-level match that wasn't that over.
That's a criticism I have about a lot of Dragon Gate matches, because in Dragon Gate, they tend to do the same. Guy A hits his finisher on Guy B. Guy B kicks out. And what does Guy A do? Hit it another time.
Very disappointing.
If Naito just would use the Gloria more often, get the near fall with the Gloria, and then hit the Destino, that would be much better.
That's a great point, Stringer. I have to give you credit on that one. If I came back, I would totally steal that move, the Gloria. it's a great move. Like, and it's totally legitimate as a near fall. If he wanted to use it, you know? So I completely agree with you on that one.
But in the end, the main event of that show was a great match with Kota Ibushi going over Hiroshi Tanahashi. Just like we talked about Okada before, Tanahashi going full heel on Ibushi here in... It wasn't Ibushi's hometown, but it's Ibushi's home prefecture. So the fans were behind him, and he was main eventing that show. And great trivia fact is that after the show, he said that he first saw a pro wrestling show in this very arena 23 years ago. And now he's main eventing that show here, which was a great, great detail for Ibushi. And you could see that Ibushi was highly motivated to make this match great. And I thought, to me, it worked out. I just sat back, enjoyed this match. Many, many great spots here. First of all, Tanahashi trying to ground Kota Ibushi, which didn't work out. And then Ibushi was able to hit this incredible sequence where he just lone darted Hiroshi Tanahashi under the first rope. So that looked kind of weird. But he followed it up with his swan dive German suplex, which is just a phenomenal combination. And it's just peak Kota Ibushi, this combination is. And then he hit this sit-down last right he finishes a lot of matches with, and Tanahashi was able to get the shoulder up just before the three count, and the look on Ibushi's face, the look of disbelief, was phenomenal here. And that led to Ibushi going into fatality mode and hitting this knee strike where he has the arms of his opponent crossed so that the opponent has no chance whatsoever to protect himself or to reverse this move. And he hit Tanahashi square in the face with his knee and got the victory here with the move that is called the Kamigoe. And the literal translation for Kamigoe is something like exceeding or going across God, crossing God, or going behind God, beyond God. That's it. That's the translation for that. And he was able to defeat ace of the company,
the universe.
Still the ace of the universe, and that's right, with his knee strike. Great main event match here.
Oh my god, I love that near fall so much. I immediately noted that when that happened. That was one of the best of the year. I don't know how they got it. This was just perfect. Tanahashi, man, this guy, you gotta talk about a guy. Everybody, I got a DM just yesterday telling me how this guy's so injured, he needs to take all this time off. But even despite that, this dude is amazing. Like, one of the best in the company. That was, like, next level, just next level instinct to be able to pull that near fall off the way he did. And I love the finish so much with the going beyond God, the GBG, as Ibushi nailed him with that. That just looked great. And it was a surprise finish, too. I wasn't expecting it to go down that way, but I was so happy. It was the opposite of that Naito match when he hit that pile driver. I was afraid that Tana was going to kick out, and I'd be like, no, that's a great move. Like, don't kick out. And I was like, yes, when it worked. It was just a great match overall. One of my favorites of the tournament. Another one of those top five matches. I think it would be. This is definitely a strong contender. Maybe even better than Ishii Nagata match. I thought, you know,
I thought it was
this bad. Was a great. Yeah, me too. I think I did too, to be honest with you. And I think Ibushi. I talked about Ishii earlier. Ibushi is right behind him. It's like you're splitting hairs trying to find who the best one between them is. Like, if you told me Ibushi's the number one, how can you argue? Because he's been so great. He, to me, is on a whole new level that he's been at. In previous G1s and previous years, I think he's really established himself as one of the best pure wrestlers in the company during this up to this point, and I've really enjoyed his tournament. And the ace of the universe has also had an incredible run and is definitely in my top five overall after this match. I really love what he's brought to the table. And I think Block A, especially when you look at what they've done with Block B, I think Block A is a lot more interesting when it comes to the rankings than we thought it could be going in, because I think we pretty much all, and we probably still think this deep down, I do at least, that this is Naito's block to win. Mm-hmm. But they've done a great job with pretty much everybody. Yes. But outside of Nagata, they've all kept everybody in play, not only in play, but they booked them logically and kept them believable that they could go on a run. Yes. And I really enjoy this Block A a lot.
Right, me too, and one point I want to make about Ibushi is, in prior times, Ibushi would have probably went for his Phoenix Splash after the powerbomb didn't work out. He didn't here. He used his Kamigoe knee, and Chris Charlton pointed that out on Twitter. Maybe he's saving up his Phoenix Splash for a certain someone.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that...
We'll see. Definitely a great main event to this show.
Two awesome matches.
Yes, yes. And Yoshi versus Fale was had a very good story. So, good show.
I like this show. I really like this show. I think when you were talking earlier, I don't buy that. We're about to get into it, but I don't really buy that as a criticism. I think if you have good matches, it will still be good. I think when you have one block that's doing a real not as good job. That we're about to get into, I think maybe those shows are a lot harder when the wrestling isn't as good. Because Block A, I had no problem with this 9/11 show. Oh, or even the other show before that. I really enjoyed this show. I thought it was a bona fide hoot. I'd even give it that rating.
Bona fide hoot. I'm looking forward to your rating to this next show that happened earlier today in Fukuoka. Drawing, let me just look at it, 3,184 fans in the Fukuoka Citizen Gymnasium. We had a undercard. I liked the Young Lions opening match here with Oka and Shota Umino against Kitamura and Renarita. And Oka was doing a great submission hold on poor Renarita with this crap hold, and he really pulled it back a couple of times, so Narita had to tap out. We had a cool little match, Kota Ibushi and Tiger Mask, going over Yuji Nagata and Hirai Kawato here. Again, Kota Ibushi teaming with Tiger Mask. Strange. Otherwise, the undercard matches weren't as noticeable. What I noticed was that Hiroshi Tanahashi used the High Fly Flow on David Finlay, which was kind of strange. Don't know why he's going for the High Fly Flow in these tag matches.
Hey, listen, he's putting it all on the line.
Yeah,
he never gets tired.
That's true. So let's get into it. First, G1 match here. Maybe this was the match of the night. Maybe Omega versus Evil was better, but I really liked Zanada versus Juice Robinson. And someone on Twitter asked me if the ongoing storyline of Juice Robinson selling his leg was or isn't going to be that great because it serves for a lot of similar matches. But then I pointed out that the opposition that Juice Robinson faces in each of his matches is always different, and they always exploit the injury that Juice Robinson has here with his knee in different ways. And Sanada was able to exploit it in a different way than, for example, Minoru Suzuki was able to exploit it. And in this match, Sanada, of course, went for Juice Robinson's legs, and they had a great back and forth when Sanada tried to get him into the skull end, and Juice Robinson was going for the pulp friction on the other hand. They went back and forth, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but in the end, here, Sanada getting the same finish that he got over Michael Elgin with the skull end into the rounding body press in a what I thought was a very good match.
Yeah, it was definitely a solid match, I would say, between these two here. Like you said, you could say it's the same kind of thing, but Juice has a lot of great emotions, and he emotes well, you know. He sells it well, and every facet of selling, too, not just... It's not like he's just grabbing his leg and saying, ow.
Yes.
He's, you know, he has a lot of different layers to his selling that he does here, and I think that's good. Sanada was his typical self here. He had a lot of good offense, really smooth work here. And, you know, it was just a solid match, a fair match, nothing to say really bad about it at all. Just a good match.
Okay, so from here. Toru Yano beat Michael Elgin in under 3 minutes via DQ. Because Toru Yano was going along the lines of Eddie Guerrero, lie, cheat, and steal. Yano was faking a low blow from Michael Elgin, which got the DQ. So, this makes sense if you go along the pro wrestling rules. This doesn't make sense if you look at what New Japan usually does and what referees in New Japan let pass in a lot of singles matches. It makes absolutely no sense to get a DQ here.
I was very disappointed by this match because I wanted to ask you if you were still on Elgin's train to win the tournament.
Well, obviously, no, I was never on his train to win the tournament. I was on his train to win the block. Yeah. Yeah, obviously no after this match because this one got Michael Elgin eliminated.
Yeah, he's gone.
And there's a lot to be sad about the way Michael Elgin is going out here. It will certainly create a lot of rumors about Michael Elgin's future, that he's the way he went out in this tournament.
Especially this way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How he went out.
At this point, I don't know what else there is to say about this one. It was weird.
Listen, I tried to tell you before the tournament that Elgin, you know, it wasn't, his odds were not good for many reasons.
Listen, Dylan, you said that about almost everybody in this tournament. You said it about Evil, you said it about Ishii, you said it about Saber, you said it about Michael Elgin, so what do
that's true, but...
Yeah.
But, like I said, Saber still has not beat my points total yet, so in theory, he could totally be the same way. Ishii, I was totally wrong about, but I was very happy to be wrong about. But there's logic behind this with Elgin, and he's gone. But yeah, okay, another Yano match.
Enough
already.
Enough already about this.
Enough already with someone else that we're about to talk about.
Minoru Suzuki beat Satoshi Kojima, 10 minutes. It was a match. It was the usual Suzuki stuff, and I didn't like it.
Suzuki sucks. Like, he just... I hate these matches so much.
One great spot in this match was when Minoru Suzuki was able to get the Manjigatame on the top rope on Kojima. It was cool.
Yeah.
But except for that, you know, Suzuki-gun always interferes in every single match, and then Tenzan fights back, and Red Shoes almost sends him out. Why?
He's gone too far, Striga.
Yeah.
I wish that there was some way to explain this, like Suzuki pays off Red Shoes or something before the match.
I still want to see Desperado's managing license.
That's true. That's even more controversy in all of this. But I just don't want to see Minoru Suzuki in matches, like wrestling or anything in New Japan. Can we send him to Ring of Honor and Suzuki-gun? We don't send him to Noah because I kind of watched that show. Send him to Ring of Honor where we can all just pretend. Yeah, and the people who like him can still go see him and be happy. So it's all good. You know, he could be in the West.
Let's just get to the next match here. I don't think there's anything we need to point out about this one.
He needs to be deported, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Okada beat Tama Tonga. Okada going up to 12. Tama Tonga down at 4. He's eliminated 2 from the tournament now. He beat him in 11 minutes with the Rainmaker. And this goes to the point that we made about Tama Tonga on an earlier show we did. His performances are almost always good. But Tama Tonga never has this banger. He never has this signature big match. He wins. He defeated Tanahashi last year, but that didn't lead him anywhere. Here I was almost certain that they would give him another victory over a great wrestler with Okada, but they didn't, because Okada was able to get the victory. I don't think he did the wrist holding here in this match. I don't think he did. One thing here, Tama Tonga, of course, goes back to using the offense of former Bullet Club members. In Carl Anderson, he does the gun stun, and he also used the Pele kick in this match that AJ Styles still uses. Mm-hmm. But that didn't get the victory for him. He was beaten by the Rainmaker, eliminated from the tournament in a solid match. I just don't know if Tama Tonga is... He's a very good tag team wrestler. Let's keep it that way.
Yeah, I like this tag team. I would describe him as a high floor, low ceiling type of wrestler, pretty much. It's like, all of his matches I've rated pretty much the same, outside of that stupid Suzuki match. But, yeah, this was another solid little match. Nothing to say. I think there was only one Rainmaker, too. So this is, yeah. That's not... Tatanga totally below Okada's level. Not even worth the extra Rainmakers. But, you know, I have to say this. Tonga, he's okay. He's like as like the ninth or tenth best man in the block. I think he does an admirable job on that. So I don't have anything too negative to say about him for his role. But he's definitely not the most inspiring wrestler at this point, I would say. And this thing about Okada, this is what I wanted to say earlier. So Okada, he's undefeated to this point in the G1. Killing everyone. Besides this Tonga match, he's pretty much ran through everyone, destroyed them with multiple Rainmakers, and has basically... And we saw, after one of his matches, his more heelish tendencies started to come out, where he apologized for being too good and making his matches too predictable, which was a very funny line, a very good line. But I have to call out what I'm calling the Okada truthers out there, which are people who have shoved this fake storyline, similar to the Tanahashi, the fallen ace, who is the Intercontinental Champion and leading his block halfway through. This Okada storyline about him supposedly barely hanging in there as champion, and very much on the edge, that's what I heard all summer, is that he's right there, he's about to, you know, it's all catching up to him. But when we watch his actual matches, he's destroyed all competition and is clearly the best wrestler on this roster, according to their booking. There's no one in. That these people are bringing up about New Japan that don't ever play out on the screen. And this was another one. This guy is not barely hanging in there. This guy is a dominant champion. One of the most dominant we've ever seen. He can out-wrestle Suzuki, survive all his submissions. He can out-strike Shibata, survive his headbutt, out-wrestle the Iron Man for 60 minutes in Omega. He's got more heart than juice. His lariat's better than Kojima. He's the greatest wrestler of all time. That's what we've seen on this in this promotion. And is it any question why people could see this and take it as nauseating that he so blatantly shoved down all of our throats as the greatest of all time? With this story. That is the story they're telling in this company this year. And I like his matches. I've liked his tournament. I think he's actually showed a lot of growth, much like in that Kojima match where he started to work more heel. He paid attention to the crowd. He did a really great job. I really enjoyed his matches. And I think he's probably been the overall best person in Block B, to be honest with you. I give him props there. But it's no surprise to me why there would be backlash to him with this storyline, this egregious booking of him right now, which I don't know to what end it's going, because he's been... Does he need this? Does he really need this? I just wonder. That's kind of what I think when I watch him, when I watch these matches.
You know, you just mentioned the word backlash, and that's a point I wanted to make here, because I don't sense any kind of backlash. Okada is...
You don't think there's any backlash?
No.
Under, between Western fans
and him? I haven't seen a lot of backlash, actually.
Not a lot of backlash, but... There's definitely been some backlash to him.
There is always some kind of backlash against anybody. But on the big scale, I haven't seen a lot of backlash against Okada here. But I can partly agree to what you said about him. Point is that in one interview after one match, he went into the direction to explain that he really does hold on to the wrist because he's feeling that he's worn down. But still, the point is absolutely valid that he's not worn down, that he is the best wrestler in this tournament, which you can see when you look at the Block B, because he's leading Block B with 12 points and hasn't lost a single match. So there is some disconnect and you pointed that out, and that's totally right, yes.
I don't mind him being a strong champion. I just think him specifically, I don't know if he really needs it, because they've already gone so strong with him, and I'm not sure what the point of this is, really. And it really takes a lot of drama out of his matches, I feel like, thus far in the tournament. You know, and like I said, I don't want to say, this isn't me hating on Okada. I really like this tournament thus far, and I actually... I've always been a fan of strong champions. If they go this route, I think it would, honestly, if they just have him run through everybody and win the tournament, that would be something nobody expected. And honestly, I think he has to be considered the favorite of his block at this moment, either him or Omega, depending that. And that would, and if he, the potential of him winning also adds doubt to Block A, which I think is actually a smart booking decision, a smart storyline, because you'd think they would not run Naito versus Okada on this show, on the G1 final show, if they were going to that. So I think it's added a lot of intrigue to Block A inadvertently.
Exactly.
But yeah, so I have no problem with that. I think it's kind of, I'm more outlining against these people that make up these fake storylines in New Japan, just like the fallen ace Tanahashi. That, like, let's watch the shows and let them play out and not talk about this craziness.
Okay. You know? One thing about the blocks, I've read some people that don't really like that they are making Block B all about Okada and Omega. But on the other hand, as you just pointed out, Block A is much more open to anyone winning at this point. Well, except for maybe Yoshiashi and Nagata.
So
you have two completely different ways they are approaching these blocks. One block is very open, and the other block is centered around Okada and Omega. So that's completely fine in my estimation. And Omega, he is at 10 points now, defeating Evil in the main event. 23 minutes with Hikata Yoko no Tenshi. Very good match. Awesome performance by both guys. They really brought it here with some dangerous looking and some really dangerous moves. When Evil threw Omega through the table really exploded. And Evil's eye was messed up after that, which made for a great visual in the end, because Evil has this makeup and then the blood was mixing with the makeup. That looked great. Kenny Omega doing crazy spots again when he did the double stomp onto the table that was on top of Evil, who was laying out on the outside. They did these chair spots that Evil always does. Omega, in the end, getting the Kata Yoko no Tenshi, he was again hitting multiple V triggers in the match, one of the which apparently knocked out Evil, because Omega was going for the Kata Yoko no Tenshi, but he couldn't pull up Evil, who was laying on the ground and wasn't responding to Omega pulling him up. So that was very uncomfortable in the end, and I was really worried for Evil when Omega pulled him up for the Kata Yoko no Tenshi. I was fearing that Evil just might be falling down from Omega's shoulders, and that was really, that had to be hard work for Omega to pull off the Kata Yoko no Tenshi with basically dead weight.
Yeah, man. I think this was like three quarters of a great match.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when I saw that with Evil, that was, it's just one of those things. And I wonder, right away you could tell something was off with it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. I wonder if this was the original plan or if they had something else up their sleeve, either later in the match or a different finish or what. But it just, it came across very oddly. It didn't fit with the flow of the match. But, you know, they put in a great effort. Evil took a beating. Omega was clearly not pulling any punches in this match. But, you know, there was excitement going on here, and I thought Evil totally looked up to the task of being a main event player, in my opinion. And I was kind of sad to see him lose. I mean, considering what happened, it was inevitable, but I really like what we've seen from Evil in this tournament. I think he stood out in Block B. And like you said, Omega is clearly one of the guys they're focusing on. In the block, they're setting up that last match, and I think this pretty much confirms it now that Evil has two losses. Even though they're not technically eliminated, the guys with two losses are, it's going to be rough, you know.
Yeah.
We're going to have to see something really unexpected to see one of them step up. So it's basically down to Omega and Okada. I really like what we've seen from Evil thus far. I hope he's okay. I hope he can get into that match with Okada Saturday and work through it and just be okay. Hopefully it's nothing too serious in his head. That's about all I can say.
Yes. So we are right now at day 12. There is one day off. Hope you've been able to follow along with us. We stick to New Japan on these shows because there's a lot to talk about New Japan these days. We're eventually going to do another show on different promotions, looking at the Sumo Hall card for All Japan and talking about DDT and Dragon Gate, for example. But around this time of the year, there's just so much stuff going on in New Japan that we have to keep it to New Japan. So there is also an email I got with another question, but I'm totally out of time. So with four questions, Nick from Switzerland sent in questions, and Nick wants it to be known, Nick also being a listener from the very first episode on, so thank you, Nick, for listening throughout the history of this show. And Dylan, you know, I want to thank everybody for going along with us through the G1 climax. This is always exciting times in the summer, during the summer. I like it, I love it, and I always enjoy doing these shows with you. Also, I enjoy doing more shows than last year with you, because last year you went solo on, I think, two shows.
Yeah, you left me all alone.
Yes, I did. I'm so sorry.
I did say it was all for you during one of those episodes.
That's true.
But yeah, thank you so much, Nick, for listening to every episode and sending in those questions. I made sure to note down that we will answer those questions the next episode. So don't worry, I would not let Striga get away with this.
What are you accusing me of?
I mean, we're going to have to wait till the next episode.
That's
what I'm accusing.
That's right. All right, man. Yeah, so this has been it for this episode of the Eastern Lariat. I want to thank you again for devoting your time to this show while watching the G1 Climax going on. So thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.